That's why I think it's such an exciting time to be alive. But the reason it's such an exciting time to be listening to the Adam versus the Man podcast right now is we've got James Corbett here of the Corbett Report. And he has been pointing out how 3D printers are similar to the replicators from Star Trek. And I'm looking forward to all of these things and talking about all these new technologies and talking about coming to the singularity. I have not watched nearly enough science fiction. People have been thinking about this for years, and now it's right around the corner, and we are so fortunate to have so many great minds in the Liberty Movement who are starting to look at the world this way, who are able to analyze these dynamics. So James Corbett joined us tonight as the editor, webmaster, writer, producer, and host of the Corbett Report, and he has been living in Japan since 2004. James, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to finally hook up with you. I've been trying to get in touch with you for years, but you're a busy man.
I hope I'm not that hard to get a hold of. So for years, maybe from Japan, it's a little more challenging. But tell us, what is the Corbett Report, and how are you looking forward to these massive changes that humanity is looking at right around the corner right now?
Well, I would hope there's at least a little bit of overlap between our audiences, but for people out there who know nothing about me, yes, I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and basically I've been doing podcasting and interviews and articles and videos for the past 5 years, trying to draw attention to issues of geopolitical importance and philosophy and science and society, all sorts of different issues. And I think, like yourself, I've been on a journey of discovery of what freedom is really about and what it really means. I think that's been at the heart of what the Corbett Report's been since its inception. But really, I think it has been a lengthy process. And sometimes I think I kick myself like you kick yourself, and everyone, I think, who comes to the understanding of voluntarism and why that's so important, kick themselves for not having seen it all their lives. But to be fair, we've just been locked in these mental prisons for so long that I think a lot of us just get locked inside there and feel more comfortable in our cages. So when we're freed from them, sometimes we choose to stay in them for longer than we need to. But yes, I finally arrived at the understanding, oh, we should actually base our society on voluntary interactions. What a radical idea. And of course, it's not long after discovering that you start to have a fundamentally different perception of the world. And it's one that's much less based on fear of what's to come and much more based on advocacy for trying to bring about the world that I think more and more of us can see coming into existence and can see the possibilities of. And we just want to let people know about that. So that's the impetus behind what I'm doing, trying to let people know that it is not all doom and gloom. And in fact, it's very much the world that we make it. And that's a message that I think very few people are really putting out there in a forceful way, which is why I'm glad that you're out there doing the work that you're doing. And let me just say, I tip my hat to all the excellent video reports you do where you talk to some of the people who are still locked in that mental prison and draw out some of their inconsistencies, etc. I love those types of reports. But on the idea of the singularity, I must admit, total ambivalence to this, because I have argued for a long time against transhumanism and others, some of the other things that I see coming along, because it is my contention that technology always has been and conceivably always will be, unless we do something about it, funded by, developed by, and rolled out by either the corporations and or the military industrial complex, or however you want to define it, that unfortunately underlies so much of the research that brings us to the technology. So ooh. I've always looked at it very, very carefully and a little bit askance. But after taking a look at this 3D printing idea, I must admit, it's just such an incredibly revolutionary technology. And this is the type of technology that I think is the strongest case for something like a techno-utopian idea, that we can actually start to take things into our own hands. If people don't know about 3D printing, I'll just say you should just go and startpage.com and take a look at 3D printing. Just type it in and take a look at some of the videos out there. It's hard to even explain, but it's such a revolutionary technology that literally puts manufacturing in the hands of the people. Literally, in the near future, probably everyone is going to have a 3D printer on their desktop to manufacture the types of items that we would have around our house instead of going out to a store to buy it.
By then, it's going to be in your pocket. But I think it's really important that you point out that there are a lot of people who come to this realization and then go, holy crap, like, all the evidence was right in front of me. All I had to do was put it together. And it's holy Kleenexes, Batman, it was right under our noses, and we blew it the whole time. Like, you just miss all this, and all of a sudden it hits you like a ton of bricks. But let me ask, because you said that you're covering stuff that you think is important in issues. Like, Doesn't the mainstream media do a good enough job about talking about what's really important?
I love it when I get a nice softball like that. I would say no. In fact, of course, the entire reason why I started the website was because when I first started looking into some of these issues, including 9/11 and also things like the monetary system itself, and I started to realize that there's so much more information and so much deeper amounts of information available online than what anything I'd ever seen in the mainstream media paradigm, that I thought it would be a complete abdication of my responsibility as a human being not to try to do something to contribute to the understanding of people out there. And at first I was just grasping at straws. I thought, oh, I'll start making, you know, CDs and DVDs and just hand them out to people. And then I thought, well, I could probably reach more people if I start a website. And that was literally the whole impetus behind starting the website. It was probably the only spontaneous thing I've ever really done in my life. And yet it's come to completely define my life. And I'm glad that I did it. And this is part of the greater shift in consciousness that's taking place across the world right now, because it's technology like the internet that is transforming us from a community of passive observers and consumers into people who realize we can start producing our own media. And in the very near future, we'll all be manufacturing our own household goods. We are turning ourselves into self-sufficient, independent human beings, which is the backbone of liberty. So it may be a case where technology is actually transforming us into a better species in some ways. And I'm excited to explore those possibilities.
Hasn't that always been the case with technology? Hasn't technology, even when it's empowered people who had it in the wrong hands, hasn't the effect of it always been to fundamentally empower people to live better? I mean, isn't that inherent in the definition of technology? Technology is how we figure out how to live better. And if we're living better, we're better able to assert our rights and be self-sufficient and be more free, no?
It might be disingenuous for me as a 21st century spoiled brat to sit here and to make the counter argument to that, but I will try to make it anyway, because I think there is a case to be made that the material comfort of our 24/7 news feed, microwave oven, quick fix world is not necessarily the pinnacle of what it means to be a human and what human civilization can achieve.
Right. That's when we have.
Of course, I enjoy those comforts and I don't take them for granted, and I probably couldn't live without them because I am that 21st century spoiled brat. But I think that sometimes, in some ways, the ways that technology in the past have changed human society have not always been unequivocally for the better. And we can look at the ways that industrial manufacturing processes transformed the society from a society of artisans and people who produced their own goods into a society of people who went to a factory enslaved hour Sure. after hour, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year for their entire productive lives, turning out widgets for some corporation that they couldn't care less about. That I don't know if that's really a progress, but it certainly did make our material world more comfortable. But I think we're coming back to maybe a 21st century type of artisan culture where more people will be designers. They will be producers. They will be people who can actually do things for themselves. So this might be a different type of change than what we've seen in the past.
Well, I wouldn't argue against the idea that it's been a process of two steps forward, one step backwards of human progress. And I would make the case that actually where we are at this particular moment overall, with statism being the overriding paradigm and the most dominant factor, you know, external factor in how most people live their lives. And most people, of course, because statism works as a paradigm, don't even realize that. And I would say that starting in 1913, you know, we started a major step backwards with the Federal Reserve that has created such a massive government scam that really is a global phenomenon. But at the same time, like even within that, we had a gay rights movement, we had a women's rights movement, we had a civil rights movement. Not that those are not that I'm supporting how those were instituted in government, but those represent major steps forward for the paradigm in terms of how do we get along as human beings? How do we make our lives better? If you're not going to get hung up over something that's not relevant to how someone interacts with you and can do business with you and make your life better, like their gender or their skin color or their orientation, right? You know, those are things of progress.
They are, but we also have to look at the ways that, unfortunately, scientific techniques have been used to more carefully manufacture citizens of a good republic who will go along with the prevailing status paradigm. And it would be naive to think that the people who have been openly writing about social engineering and forms of social control for 100+ years now haven't been trying to apply technologies and techniques to try to better mold people's minds into a state of passive reception of ideas. And I think that the technology that we're starting to see come along could fight against that, but it is still very much a question of mindset and perception. And I'm loath to bring it back to a pop culture reference, but I am a huge Smashing Pumpkins fan. I'm a big fan of Billy Corgan, who, say what you will about him as a human being, at the very least, he's quite intelligent and quite insightful if you listen to his interviews.
He has a great haircut, too.
I remember back in 2003 when Zwan released Mary Star of the Sea, there was an interviewer asking about the album because it was quite a poppy kind of, you know, uplifting kind of album, I guess you could say, as opposed to some of his darker material. And this was coming out right in the midst of the Bush era and the Iraq War and all of this. So the interviewer was asking, well, is this a response to what's going on politically? What's happening there? And Billy said something that sticks with me to this day. He said, well, it's a question it's not necessarily a question. These times that we're living through right now are very important. They're very terrible in a lot of ways, but these times will pass. This will pass. The Bush era will pass. We will come out of this into a different historical era. And it's not necessarily a question of the specific things that are going to happen to take us there. It's a question of what kind of human being is going to be there on the other side. So I think that there is definitely a social mindset that has to be inculcated towards freedom for the technology to be used in that way, because technology is always a double-edged sword. And if people don't understand what it is they're holding in their hands and the power to liberate humanity that that represents, then we can be shunted off into various different systems that look nothing like what you and I want to achieve.
That's something that I wanted to bring up to you. I mean, my name is Chris Cantwell. I'm guest hosting for the week, and spending some time with Adam this week has been interesting. He's introducing me to some of this futurism and the different hopes that he has for technology to better mankind. But my study of history, if not the future, teaches me that, you know, we get all these different technologies, and these technologies have such a great potential to push us forward. But my analysis of it tells me that over the last 1,000 years, mankind as a creature really hasn't changed too much. Whatever technology he gets, he uses it to fuck, kill, consume, and control. That's all that humans seem to want to do for the most part. We have these very intelligent and logical and rational people who give us these great things, but like 3D printers, even libertarians who are, you know, trying to be peaceful people, the first thing we think of is, can I make a gun with this?
Wait. I was going to make a fleshlight.
All right. Fucking kill. Fuck, kill, consume, and control. That's, you know...
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And that's, I mean, that is a point, because we can look back at what is probably the most revolutionary technology of the last 1,000 years, at least where I'm coming from, the Gutenberg movable type printing press, which in itself was not something necessarily new. He just took a bunch of technologies that existed and kind of put them together. But that was such a transformative technology in the way that it had such potential to further the human civilization. And in many ways, it did live up to that promise. But it's not, I don't think we can say that unproblematically the printing press made human society better or smarter or in some ways we can say it made it so that it's easier. And there's a higher literacy rate, obviously, now than there was before that, because more people have the ability to read. There's more materials to read, etc., etc. We can talk about that, but we also have to look at the ways that the printing press enabled new forms of propaganda, new forms of propagandization to the masses that wouldn't have been possible to ruling elites before. And I think we have to look at the ways that technology can be used to suppress whatever type of freedom that they bring about at the same time. And it's a question of consciousness. It's a question of the way people approach the technology.
You know, I'm totally appreciating this new perspective of that dynamic with technology. And what you're suggesting is that the technology has the potential to create better tax cows, better servants of the superclass, and that while you're not fundamentally challenging any of my assumptions or underlying dynamics, you're saying that the improvement effect could go to the superclass and therefore end up with a better totalitarian system. And while it will advance humanity, the only people that will be truly advanced are the ones that really control that. But I think that breaks down at one point. And it's the what we're coming to, it might not be true up until this point, but what I call the asymptote, you know, when things get really crazy and the computing power is increasing faster than we can even figure it out. Everybody's got computers in their brains, and at one point it becomes an experience of pure human will. Like, what happens?
Hold on a second, because you just elided over the most important part. You said everybody's got computers in their brains. I'm positing that there's going to be a space between the introduction of things like that type of technology and the widespread adoption of it. And it's in that space that
right.
we can
no, I agree.
I agree.
But you can't. There's one of the other fundamental dynamics of technology is that you cannot really effectively sequester it. And this, now, you might have said that in the past. Like, relatively speaking, you could sequester technology. Not in the age of 3D printers. The only question for when they get really adopted, right before we get them in everybody's homes, is whether or not you're going to pick yours up at Walmart or your neighbor is going to print it for you. But we have enough time. I want to take a few calls. 507, you're on the line. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Adam, this is Jason. I actually was hoping to talk about Piers Morgan, so if you could gloss over me and go to the next caller and get me on later, that'd be great.
All right, we can do that. 432, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Talking to me now?
Yep, go ahead.
Hey, it's Ben Farmer from Odessa, Texas. How you guys? Yeah, I'm glad to be calling in and enjoying the new kind of Adam versus the Man, the Stono and Drunky show.
Hey, can you speak up, please?
How much having now that Chris Cantwell's on board? I'm having a load of fun.
Good to hear from you, Ben.
Excellent.
So anyways,
we can barely hear you.
Ask James a question,
well,
Ben.
I'll hang up, Ben. I apologize. I'll hang up. I don't know what the technical problem is. Go on to the next call, then.
All right, call back after 11. All right, and we just lost the other callers. I don't know how that happened. Technical difficulties. Everybody's stoned now, right? All right, so, James, what do you see, though, as the end game of this when everybody has – like, see, at some point, 3D printers get small enough and effective enough and efficient enough, they're essentially – creating things out of thin air, right? You understand that element, at least with plastics, all the other pollutants in the air. I'm thinking that they're going to get to the point where they can actually just recombine the molecules in the air, and you'll be able to create raw material that way. But with metals, you need fusion. You need incredible amounts of energy. That might be some limitation on this. But we've already got the air full of pollution. There's already a place in Canada where they're making plastic bags by pulling pollution out of the air and reconstituting it as plastic. You know, we've got computers now that can read brains. Like, that's already here. What happens when you can literally just conjure shit out of thin air by thinking about it?
That's a good question, and one that I think is above my pay grade. But let me posit this question to you. Do you think that the technologies that we're seeing coming out now, like the 3D printing, etc., is the cutting edge of technology? Or do you think that there are things that are being developed by the multi-billion dollar defense industry that we can't even begin to imagine right now?
Sure. The government's got to have something that, you know, all the stuff that we've never heard of that's already in development, if not already practically implementable. But the question that I've been asking everybody, this is the million Bitcoin question, right? When I was going to call it the $1 million question, but we know by the time we get to this point, the dollar is going to be long gone. When everybody in the world has a computer in their brain that's smarter than you, or everybody who wants one, but it's going to be like this, like cell phones. You know, oh, people said 10 years ago, oh, I'm never going to get a cell phone. That's ridiculous. And now, like, you're a Luddite if you don't have one, right? At some point, I'm pretty confident, maybe it's not going to be in the brain, but everybody's going to have a brain-augmenting computer. Heck, we already do. They're just not directly augmenting in a physical sense. We still have to take them in through external senses. But when everybody's got a computer in their brain that's smarter than you and a 3D printer in their living room that can generate whatever they want out of thin air – what do you get that guy for Christmas?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I guess you can maybe manufacture it in your 3D printer. But that's a good point, and I agree that that leads to a different philosophical conversation than I think the one that I'm interested in having, because once we get to that point of the complete universal adoption of this technology, it is a different game. Then we're talking about what does it mean to be human and that kind of thing. But I think the more interesting point is how do we get from here to there? It's always the transitions that are the important part. And I point people to this BBC news story that came out a few years ago all the time because it's so bizarre. It was under the headline something like "Humanity to Split into Two in the Future." And it's this the professor at some highfalutin university.
Talking about
the genetic manipulations that are going to be happening, the gene plus human beings, etc. And they've got artistic illustrations of these great, flowing, glowing white beings of light or whatever versus the ugly troglodytes who are going to be the basically what's left. And to me, it's the question of that split between the adoption of the technology and the people who don't get to adopt it. And if you think truly that, starving children in Africa are going to be getting this type of technology at the same time as everyone else is, I would like to be living in that world, but I don't think we are.
Yeah, but the wave of adoption is accelerating itself. How long did it take the printing press to have a global effect versus how long did it take the internet to have a global effect? And this gets to the more important dynamic to me is how this technology changes our way of thinking and the way that we do economics, right? Obviously, whenever 3D printers themselves, we can see this right around the corner, 5 to 20 years, the economy is going to be turned upside down because manufacturing as we know it won't exist. But you look at the power of the internet to wake people up. I really believe that this technology has a way of improving our way of thinking itself. And if being subservient truly is inferior to being free, then technology will empower us to be free. And while you're saying that is every kid in the third world going to have, the technology that we enjoy, those of us who are fortunate enough to be relatively close to the cutting edge by virtue of being citizens of the empire? No. But to the effect that they do get everything eventually, everybody down that pyramid does get it eventually, it gets faster and faster and faster. I mean, what happens when instead of saying, geez, you know what, I'd like to help a poor kid in Africa, I'm going to call in and give them my credit card number and donate $5. You say, maybe I'm going to 3D print a drone that's got a 3D printer attached to it that I'm just going to have dropped on some village in Africa. Like, you see how much faster it gets? And I think with the way of thinking, especially, that's going to accelerate as well. We've got a couple more callers in just a couple minutes here, but 501, you're on the line. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Adam, it's Mark from Arkansas, and I want you to know I really enjoyed the show last night, and I'm especially happy to hear from Mr. Corbett. I've been following him for quite some time. I really appreciate his analysis on a number of issues, and I'm enjoying the conversation. I don't know if I have an intelligent question to ask, but I wanted to call in to just let him know how much I appreciate his work and what he's doing to change the conversation in society. I personally believe that what we're going to be seeing, I love what Adam's doing and what he's researching and talking about on his show, because I do believe that we're moving into this paradigm shift where the entire way that we interact is going to change. I believe that the people that are currently ruling the world are going to be essentially destroyed. There's not going to be this evil influence that we currently have in the world.
Yeah.
That we're going. I'm very hopeful for the future, is what I'm saying.
Outstanding, Mark. Thank you so much for the call. James, I know you've just got a couple minutes left. Your thoughts on that and anything you'd like to plug tonight?
Well, thank you for that call, first of all. And it is good to hear that more and more people are picking up on this message. And let me say, at the end of the day, I am hopeful, too, because if I wasn't hopeful that we would come out as a better species on the other side of this, then I wouldn't be sitting here doing this right now. I'd be off enjoying myself and just drinking myself into oblivion or whatever it is that I could do to get rid of the gnawing doubt in my head. But obviously, I think that we can do something about this. And even if we just take it down to the 3D printing level, that's an example example of how we can insert ourselves into this right now as the technology is being adopted to hopefully change the paradigm that we're living in. And there are people doing things like that at Thingiverse.com and some other websites out there where people are uploading their designs for free, completely free, so that people can go and download those designs and print them off on their own printers, completely circumventing this whole intellectual property scam, which is a scam. And we can start participating in communities like that to completely get around the system that hitherto has been enslaving us. So it is a message of empowerment, and I do think we will survive this and thrive, and we will come out better on the other side. But I think we have to be careful about what's happening and think deeply about it. On that note, I just hope people will go to CorbettReport.com, and all of my work is up there for free download, videos, articles, interviews. Just take it, use it as the resource it is, and spread it to others.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight has been James Corbett. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your perspective. We really appreciate it. And we hope that people check out his website, Corbett with two T's, report.com, Corbett Report on YouTube. You can follow him at Corbett Report. And you know, that really does put a little wrinkle in my analysis here that there is this chance, although my end conclusion, I'm still sticking to my guns on that one. We're coming to this asymptote, but I am, you know, it does motivate me to hear that, to sort of get back in the fight in the present day and ensure that the technology doesn't hit that hiccup where it's only empowering the superclass. But at the same time, I have to think, the way that I see the paradigm shift itself happening, there's nothing that we are going to do as individuals that makes it go one way or another.
I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you there again. It's still a contest, man. It's still a contest. We are in a fight for our lives, as far as I see it. And James mentioned a couple of times that span of time between the time that the ruling elite get their hands on the technology and the time that we get it, that is a period of time where there is an infinite number of things that could happen, and that's the whole human experience, that we never know what's going to happen.
You know, I'm not going to say the government's not a threat to your life, okay? Don't get me wrong here, but that's not what the fight is about. The fight is about your freedom. You're a tax cow, right? The government doesn't want to kill you. You as an individual, like, the government really doesn't have an interest in killing you. Maybe you, Chris, but maybe me, probably Derek. But, you know, the government wants to exploit you.
Well, is to take my life from me, piece by piece.
Okay, fine. I understand that philosophical argument. I certainly endorse that perspective. I'm with you there. Like, you know, to steal from someone is to steal to steal material goods from someone is to steal their past if it's justly acquired property.
Exactly.
I know that from the Philosophy of Liberty video, from the Philosophy of Liberty itself. Yeah, I get that. But what happens when you can 3D print your own spaceship and just completely get away? Like, what happens when the human race becomes a diaspora from Earth?